Welcome to The Right Chamber,
the podcast where we dive deep into the fascinating world of medicine and healthcare.
In every episode, we will talk about pivotal topics relating to medicine and surgery in the UK and what it's like to be a healthcare professional today. We are inviting doctors and other healthcare professionals across different specialties to discuss their experiences and give an insight into what their journey has been like. Please follow us on Instagram and TikTok at RGUCMS and subscribe to our YouTube channel, RGUC Media. So sit back, ignore the traffic, and enjoy the Right Chamber podcast.
Over 35 years ago, Dr. Jane Dale began her career as an FY1 at Russell's Hall Hospital, returning in 2004 as a consultant in diabetes and endocrinology. Now Chief of Medicine at the Dudley Group, Jane has held key leadership roles, contributed to national guidelines, and championed education, patient safety, and digital transformation to enhance care. Welcome back to The Right Chamber. My name is Jaspreet, and this is Victor. And today we have Dr. Jane Dale. Hi, Dr. Jane Dale. Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Britt. I'm Jane Dale. I've worked at Dudley Group of Hospitals since I was a house officer here about 35 years ago, and then went away and did the rest of my training and came back as a consultant in 2004. And I now work partly as a consultant in diabetes and endocrinology and partly as the chief of medicine.
And what do you do in your free time?
So in my free time, the things I like to do best are walking, being on the water, and singing.
Oh.
Singing.
Yeah.
Choir singing, solo singing.
Choir singing.
Ah. Soprano, alto, tenor.
Yeah, not bass. I am a soprano that's probably more of a mezzo these days. Ah.
I have a first question to ask, which is, what is your favourite pastry and why?
Oh, actually, that's quite an easy question to answer now. My favourite pastry is a pasta de nata, Portuguese custard tart. So I always love custard tarts. But now my middle daughter, who's a musician, has moved to Portugal and has introduced me to the delights of Portuguese custard tarts. So those are my favourite.
Do you have custard tarts in England?
Yeah, but they're not as good.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so Dr. Dale, I understand that you were an F1 in Russell's Hall years and years ago. What drew you back to Russell's Hall?
So when I first came to Russell's Hall, of course, in those days, really, we were called junior house officers, to put us in our place. And I only got the job because I wanted to go to Hereford and they double booked me. So Russell's Hall turned out to be my second choice for my house job. But in the end, it shaped my whole career to get that job. So I started here after completing my first house job in Selly Oak in Birmingham and then came here to do the surgical side. It was very clear after my first appendectomy I was never going to be a surgeon. But I did really enjoy the hospital, the camaraderie, the setup. Russell's Hall at that point was brand new. It's only just been opened. And all the other hospitals in Dudley were still open, the Corbett and Wordsley and the Guest. So after I finished my F1 job, I was lucky enough to get on the medicine rotation here and I worked at all the different hospitals. And I think the people that I met in those jobs really shaped my career. So there were two really inspirational doctors, among many, that I think had the most impact on me. The first was Dr. Tony Zarlin, who was my predecessor as an endocrinologist here. And he was just one of the most inspirational physicians you could ever work with, really knowledgeable, terribly kind to his patients, lots and lots of interest outside medicine. And I remember going to his house and thinking, yeah, you know, this is the kind of doctor I want to be when I grow up. So he was really inspirational. And then Dr. Jane Flint, who I think was probably the very first female consultant at Dudley. And she was very, very supportive of those of us that were women in medicine at that time, really, really encouraging. And I remember having a conversation with her when trying to decide whether to be a GP or to be a hospital consultant. And she said, you just have to follow what you want to do and make the job fit around you. And I think I took those words to heart, and that really shaped my decision to carry on being a physician, but try and balance that with being a mum, which is what I wanted to do.
It's amazing how big an impact the people we work with, especially in those early years. You never really, don't even really realize how big of an influence it will then be, you know, towards, you know, your future career. And it just goes to show how really important it is, you know, your relationship with your patients and your relationship with other doctors, because, yeah, our impact on other colleagues around us can go.
I know, I was actually really humbled. I was in a consultant interview for a consultant in this trust we successfully appointed. And one of the things he said he remembered was one ward round that I'd done with him one Saturday, all those years ago when he'd very first come to Dudley as a trainee. He remembered that interaction. Of course, I remember nothing of it, but he did. And it was quite humbling to realise that. But I think you're right. I think it's very important to remember that whenever you have an interaction with somebody, how much of an impact your behaviour can have on them. So I think I always try to have a very positive attitude, you know, to help people in the corridor who look lost, to speak to somebody who looks a little bit distressed in the canteen or something. Because I think it's, and then hopefully someone will do the same to me. That's
I feel like I'm giving like wrong directions to all the patients all the time, so I've stopped.
You have to know the place well yourself before you do so. Well, but yeah, you're totally right. It's such an important aspect of the job, and kind of seeing Russell's Halls in particular over these years. How have you seen it, I guess, evolve till now? How would you describe evolution while you've been back?
Considering it was like a brand new hospital when you were a junior house officer.
Yeah. So I think it was nice to come and work in a new hospital. It seemed very new then compared to the old windy corridors of some of the others. And I think the thing for me that's not changed, which is really important, it hasn't changed, is the feeling of camaraderie and support that you get from the team. So I think if I walk down the hospital corridor here, I'll see lots and lots of people that I've worked with over the years, and they will all say hello or how are you getting on. And I think I've got colleagues who work in much bigger hospitals who feel that that is lost when you work in a really big place. And you might know your department very well, you might know your division very well, but you're not going to know everybody. So I think that's something that's really fundamental to Russell's Hall that's not changed. I think what's changed is it's just grown massively. I think there were 6 physicians or something. At first. And now I think there's about 140 consultants in the medical division. So I think it's grown unimaginably in what you can do and what you can offer, and the different breadths of services that you've got. So that's a huge change. And again, I think the other thing that's not changed is the population that we look after. You know, I while Dudley isn't the prettiest place in the world, it's definitely got a personality and a charm to the people that live here. That's a nice group of people to work with, I think.
What made you take up like a leadership role in this hospital? Like, what motivated you?
So I think when you first become a consultant, it's a big step from being a resident doctor. And you have to spend a bit of time getting to grips with the responsibility that comes with that. But then you start to see that you can only change so much in that one-to-one interaction between yourself and the patient. And that if you want to make a difference to it on a bigger scale, you've got to take up a leadership role and change a pathway or change a service or change the way you do things for everybody that comes along. So I think I started off by being the medical service head for diabetes and endocrinology. And we did lots of things to do to bring in subspecialty clinics, to start MDTs, to develop technology in diabetes, which obviously has been a massive change over my career, that we can now have artificial pancreases, the closed loop pumps now. Wow. That can look after the diabetes for people. So that was all really exciting. And then I think from that, I got involved in some roles about antenatal diabetes, which is my particular interest within diabetes, and was fortunate enough to be involved in the investigation into maternal mortality, obviously the ultimate tragedy in childbirth, and from that learning how we could deliver better care for pregnant women with diabetes. And so I led a national project on diabetes antenatal care. And that was the opportunity to change things across the whole country, which is, you know, to be part of that was a really inspirational moment, to be honest. And to see things that you've designed being used all over the country was incredible. And so I got involved then with NICE, and I did a lot of work with the Quality Standards Committee, where we look at all the NICE guidance and then try and coalesce it into the 3-5 most important things that you need to deliver out of that uniformly across the country. And that gave me the that opportunity to change things even outside my own specialty. So, you know, I would learn about Lyme disease one week or cataract surgery the next week, things I had absolutely no knowledge of before. But you can contribute as a bystander in those and have a voice, which is really interesting. So then when this opportunity came up to be the chief of medicine, because my predecessor Dr. Healy had decided that he wanted to go and live on the other side of the world with his son, I felt the time was right. My children had finally all flown the nest, and I felt I had the time to devote to the role, because it is very time consuming. And so I started that about 3 years ago.
Wow. And, you know, you said it's a very time consuming role. How is it, have you found the challenge of balancing, you know, your love for clinical work and then managerial duties? How do you go about that?
Yeah, that's the trickiest part, really, because, you know, you really need a sort of 9-day week to fit it all in. One of the keys is try and be in the moment of what you're doing. So if I'm in a clinic or if I'm on call, I'm trying just to be the doctor for that patient, the support for the resident doctors working with me. But if I'm in a meeting talking about telemetry or an ED rebuild or developing our medical enhanced care unit, then I try to be in the moment of that. So I think it is about focus and being able to move from one thing to the other and not let them intrude too much on each other. But it's hard.
How do you manage to support consultants and junior residents in patient care? How do you help them deliver like better patient care?
So I think you have to put yourself in their shoes, you know, because I think most people come to work to do a good job. It doesn't matter what your job is. Most people come to work to try and do the best possible job they can. And the reason they might not be able to do that is often because of very simple external things that are stopping them. It could be that they haven't had the right training opportunities. It could be that there isn't just enough time or space to see the patients. It could be that they need some more equipment to do it. It could be that they need to redesign the pathways to make them more efficient. So I think you have to start by listening and really trying to understand what the blockers are. And then you can often get people to think in a different way about the problem. So I think some of the most rewarding things is where you meet two groups of people that have got loggerheads over a decision. It's then all become quite confrontational. But trying to reset that discussion so that it's more about how you can find a common solution together.
So that must be really challenging if there's like two people who have like completely opposite thoughts. And then you try to like find like a common ground between them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Prioritizing patient care and then being forward thinking as well and improving things.
But I find most people really do want to do the best for the patient. So I think if you bring it back to the patient, that's the best way to resolve those issues. And I think the other thing is just having a positive mindset. I like to think of myself as quite a positive person, trying to find a way through a problem rather than all the reasons why you can't fix it.
And I think if we all have like a mindset of, you know, solving problems, having that orientation of, because that it's easy to fall into that culture of, oh, there's this issue here. Well, are we managing with it? Well, then. Yeah. But if we have that attitude of, well, okay, what can we do? Let's put our minds together. How can we go about solving these these issues? Then progress will just skyrocket, wouldn't it? And
yes, I definitely got a bit of a tendency to turn the stone over and look what's underneath.
Okay, we have lots of resident doctors that listen to our podcast, and I think they would really love some advice. So what do you think are the best qualities for the next generation of doctors? What are the best qualities for them to have to be the best physicians, maybe in
maybe
medical,
even surgeons
or even surgeons?
Surgeons, yes.
What would you say?
So, you know, I'm not only been obviously a doctor in training myself, but I've also the parent of a doctor in training, and his wife is also training to be an endocrinologist. So I know it's been a really tough time to be a resident doctor at the moment. I think it was always tough, and I think we had different challenges when I was training, but it has been very difficult. I think morale is very low. So the first thing I would say is that being a doctor is great, fundamentally. I like being a doctor. It's a privilege. And it's still the same privilege that it always was, to be able to look at a patient in need of something and help make them feel better, find a way to live with their condition, offer some treatments that might make life a bit more manageable for them. And I think that that is such a worthwhile thing to do. And that is the core of what we do. So I think looking for the good in what you do. The other thing I think is to realise that everybody in the hospital does want the same things, even if we work in different professions and different backgrounds. So making sure that you make really strong relationships with the other members of the multidisciplinary team, the nursing staff, the therapy staff, the admin staff, because those people you'll probably come across your whole career. And I think it's really important that you treat everybody with that, you know, listen to their suggestions and take their support when they offer it to you. I think that's the other key. And then I think it's about being flexible with yourself, with the choices that you've got, because the NHS is not perfect. We all know that. It's
far from it.
Far from it. And there's lots of things that we could improve. But the point of being a doctor is to be part of the solution, I think, not just sit there pointing out the problems.
Well, yeah, that is a very good summary of it. Yeah, just having that mindset of being part of the solution, and you see things move forward. I think, yeah, if there's any good summary for points, like if you remember nothing of this podcast, I think that is a really, really good point.
I think it's very important to like start building the morale of like resident doctors, because it is at an all-time low right now. But I think that's a very good way of looking at it, that I think we just need to remember that we are making a difference, no matter how small.
So I've done lots of projects during as a chief with the resident doctors, for instance, redesigning the rotors. So when I started off, there was a lot of problems with the rotors and they were quite onerous. And whilst they're still, you know, we have to cover 24/7, so there's no choice about that. What we did is worked with the teams and got resident doctors on the committee designing the rotors, and they were able to point out all sorts of things, like, you know, makes a world of difference if your shift finishes at 11 p.m. rather than 2 a.m. because you feel safer going home, that we were able to implement. And again, some of the projects that I've tried to help facilitate with doctors, training to pass their exams, training to learn skills, and seeing that peer-to-peer teaching and seeing people really standing up and taking that initiative. And you can still see that same talent and enthusiasm that there always was. It's just, as you say, you've got to find it even when the going's a bit tough.
I think looking back to when you started your career, if you could go back right to the beginning and advise yourself or give yourself a piece of advice, what would it be?
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? I think certainly at times it would be to make sure you look after yourself. Make sure you put your relationships and your family first, because that is the most important thing. You know, the most important thing to me is my family, for sure. And that's okay. Make sure you give yourself good time off and enjoy your holidays and your free time, because I think sometimes work-life balance can get a bit out of kilter. But I don't think I'd change my choices. I think everything I've done, I've grown and learned something from. So I think I'd do the same again.
Brilliant.
So you've been in the NHS for what, 35 years now?
Yes.
Wow. What's the most rewarding part of your job so far?
So like I say, I think you can still get a massive reward out of, even just the other week, diagnosing somebody with adrenal insufficiency and giving them hydrocortisone, and then they feel like $1 million the next day. That's such a privilege to be able to be part of that. But if I think of some of the other projects I've done, things like we were able to relaunch medical enhanced care unit after COVID. It changed a lot during that time. And then we were able to do that. And seeing that unit giving care to our most critically sick patients, that's quite something I'm really proud of having been part of. And I think on the national scale, as I said, trying to deliver better antenatal care uniformly across the whole country was something I was really proud to be part of.
Wow.
I think all in all, it's like patient care is like the most rewarding part of your career.
Yeah.
But it's not just even the patient sitting in front of you. It's also seeing the national impact of things that you've contributed to and
change guidelines and things.
And that's amazing.
Let's be honest, it can be a bit dry when you see an opportunity.
Well, when it's all listed out and you have to look through them to know what to do.
But it's helpful for like resident doctors, like, yes, it's in front of me. This is what works.
Yeah. Mm. It gives you that confidence, doesn't it, to know what to do. Yeah.
Going through the system, what kind of legacy would you like to leave at the Russell's group of hospitals? What would you like to be known for, I guess?
It's hard, isn't it, to know the impact you'd have after you'd live. I'd like to feel that the changes you put in place were sustainable, that they didn't stop just because you left, and that people saw they were worth carrying on with. And then I think, as I started off by saying, you know, that those two consultants really shaped and influenced my career, it would be great to know that there were other people who felt that they'd achieved more because of an impact that I might have had on them. That's teaching and training the next generation is something that I do really enjoy. I love having the trainees in the clinic and seeing them, start to even impress me. Actually, let's say last week, my registrar spotted an abnormality in a blood test that I wouldn't have spotted, and was able to realise that it must mean the woman was pregnant and she thought she couldn't have any children. So he rang her up and said, I've got the most amazing news for you, but actually the reason your periods have stopped is because you were pregnant. And she came back to clinic to see me yesterday, actually, and said how much that phone call had meant to her. And I looked back at the blood test and thought, I don't know if I'd have spotted that.
Wow.
Because usually a phone call from a doctor is bad news.
Yeah, but that one wasn't. She was raped.
But it was fantastic news this time. Oh, wow. Well, that's...
And that you must be so proud.
Because you think, that's that was a really good moment to see somebody taking it forward and a learning from me. So now I know what to look for on those blood tests.
Well, I have no doubt there will be some consultants down the line who will be personally name dropping you as one of the key influences, just as you've had doctors who influenced you. And I think just that kind of culture is so beautiful to see from one set of doctors to the next.
I think it really just, that's really what makes good doctors. If how you have made an impact on someone else's life. Because a lot of people will say that, oh, I don't want to be a doctor anymore because of so-and-so.
Mm.
But I'm sure you have made a very big impact on some of your juniors.
It would just be something that's so amazing to see. And I have no doubt that you have made that impact. So look forward to some future podcasts.
Yeah, and the same with both of you, because I think you two are the future. You've got to shape it in that same way. You've got to take it all forward and stand up for the medical profession, but also set that example of the medical profession. I think
I hope we're making some difference with the medical students we're teaching.
We're trying.
Yeah, no, you will for sure.
On that note, I think that's a lovely note to end on. Thank you so much for coming onto the podcast today. It's been a lovely, lovely conversation.
Yeah,
and I'm sure our listeners as well would have, picked up a few bits and pieces from there that they'll be able to carry along with them and just be better healthcare practitioners and having this mindset of improvement, prioritizing our patients, but also prioritizing ourselves and our family as well. So much to gain from this conversation. So thank you once again.
Thank you so much.
Well, so that comes to the end of the Right Chamber podcast for today. Thank you very much for everyone who's been listening. And just as a reminder, if you would like to take part in a future podcast, get in touch with us on any of our platforms, RGUC. It would also be great if you interact with us, comment, and share your thoughts as well.
Remember to stay connected with us on social media. Follow us on Instagram and TikTok at RGUCMS. And subscribe to our YouTube channel, RGUC Media, for more exclusive content and updates. Thanks for tuning in to the Right Chamber podcast. Until next time.